Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Overnight America continues. And we got another hour. And George Sells, you heard him from the newsroom. He's got a story and a half. Man. The Univision reporter Jorge Ramos, someone popular here, he makes his rounds on the news networks, went down to Venezuela. He had the opportunity to interview Maduro, someone that shouldn't be in power, shouldn't be in office, had the illegitimate elections that were down there. And now they're trying to get him out, but he's refusing to leave. It's a really terrible mess to the point where the United States tries to send aid. And not only does he refuse, but he destroys the aid that was coming down to help his people. It's just terrible down there. So they go down and they do this interview for Univision, and he doesn't like the questions being asked. So Maduro holds him. So the government there in Venezuela holds him against his will and refuses to let him go. Now, you heard the news from George Sells just at the top of the hour here, right after the CBS News. He was in a situation where that actually happened to him. Kind of a crazy story. We're going to tell that story coming up in a little bit. Let's see. You know, there was a car story out there. I wanted to get to this because Volvo Cars said they're going to start putting limiters on their vehicles, about 112 miles per hour, starting next year, because too many people are getting seriously injured and even killed because of excessive speeding. Yeah, that's good. I mean, I actually don't see a downside with saying that maybe it's not best that your vehicle is optimized to go over 120 miles an hour, right? I know some people, they don't like the idea of being told they can't go 120. Nothing good happens at 120. Nothing good. Is there anything that you could possibly say that would be able to justify you going over 110 miles an hour or even over 100 miles an hour? You know, there's times where I've lost track of my speed. I can't say I've never lost track of my speed so easily that all of a sudden I'm going 120 and didn't realize it. I mean, you have to intentionally be going that fast. And I'm telling you, here in St. Louis, I swear that these are the worst drivers I've ever encountered. Sometimes you'll be like here when I leave the radio station at night. I'll be driving home on the interstate and then someone will blow past you like before you know it. You got to wonder if they're going at least 100. It's not even they're trying. I got to tell you, I've never seen a police officer pull over one of those that go in that late at night. And it's just amazing to me the way that people can drive and get away with it. I probably encounter 5 traffic violations a day. Like even when I was coming into the station earlier, I'm in the right-hand lane and I'm at a red light. About 3 cars back, a person went into the left lane and then made a right-hand turn in front of me, because they didn't want to wait until the light turned green. They just kind of made their own right turn lane and went around it. Regularly, you see people blowing red lights to turn left or do the turnaround. You see people blocking traffic. You see people blowing through red lights. You know, they'll go up to it, they'll look both ways and just blow and completely ignore the red light. I see that constantly downtown St. Louis. On the highways, what do I see all the time? I see the temporary tags flapping in the wind that have been long expired. You see people not even paying attention. You see people just darting through lanes, the left to the right, to the left to the right, going, blowing past here, blowing past here, cutting people off, not caring, all the time, nonstop. It's everyday occurrence here. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen other places. I'm saying that I see it every day here. I never lived in a place where I see it every day, and there's so many people doing it. You have to almost learn to drive more aggressive in order to fit in here in St. Louis. You don't tone back things in order to make things better. You got to step up your game. That's what I've learned. So the story of Volvo coming out saying that speed limitations is not a cure-all. It's worth doing if we can even save one life. Yeah, I get it. There's no justification I can think of that would make it so 110 miles an hour is justifiable. I mean, let's do the worst case scenario. Independence Day, the movie in the 1990s, Will Smith and whatever, you know, the aliens come down and people are trying to speed away from the big cities. Outside of that scenario, I can't think of anything. You know what else I saw on the St. Louis Reddit? This is so funny. This was here in Missouri, I think over on the other side of the state. But these temporary tags are out of control. You see so many of them around here. And I've been reading the debates online. I've been looking at the different forums online and people trying to justify why some of these things happen. And part of it's the personal property tax. I don't understand how some people can afford the personal property tax on some of these high-end cars. I mean, you look at it and you're like, my goodness. Like, here's one. The person pointed out this was close to a $300,000 car, depending on how they had it outfitted. It had a temporary plate expired on the thing. Thinking to yourself, you can afford, if you can afford a $300,000 car, you're driving around with this thing, certainly you can get the registration and tags and the plates for these things. But then again, how much would they be paying in personal property tax if they did that? Some people say it's just cheaper to pay the ticket than it is to pay the property tax when you get these high-end cars. And other people were bragging. They said, you know, it's a great deal. You can park wherever you want because there's not a tow company in the world that would risk damaging a $300,000 car because, you know, it's so low to the ground and they got to get it up somehow. What happens when it's in your possession and it gets busted up? They can't afford that under their own insurance plans. So people just leave it be. So these people are playing the game. They're saying, you know, what are you going to do about it, game? Yeah. It's funny, $300,000 car and they don't want to pay the taxes on it. Big surprise. There's so, and you don't have to be someone that can afford that style of car and still not want to pay it. You know, I think about people that even have high-end vehicles that are, you know, $40,000 or $50,000 cars. To me, that's a high-end vehicle. You know, you got your low-end new vehicles. $20,000 is a low-end new vehicle. That's about as low. You know, $18,000 might be the lowest you can go after you start paying taxes and things. And even then, I think, you know, if you have a $40,000 car, let's say you're doing pretty well for yourself, and you and your wife, both of you, or you know, spouse, have, let's say you have $80,000 in vehicles, that's a big chunk of change to pay every year for the personal property tax. And I think to myself, how can people afford that? How can people afford that? You know, my wife and I, we have these old vehicles. And I'm thinking, if I'm living in Missouri, from now on, I'm pretty much committing myself to a lifestyle of old vehicles because I just don't want to pay the personal property tax, you know, if I get a nice vehicle. I just don't understand it. And here's another one, too. This one was actually pretty funny. Missouri State Highway Patrol. They posted a photo of someone that made their temporary tag. Tell me if you see anything wrong with this. This was 03XJF8, expiration on the temporary tag, 2/31/19. February 31st, 2019. The state trooper put in their stay-in-school kits. It's so easy to replicate these things. Someone told me over in Illinois that these temporary plate things that you get, they disintegrate after like 30 or 60 days. So even if you were to put something in there, it's gone. And then they make it so the ink starts to wear down and degrade faster as a way to use it as an anti-counterfeit measure. So some of these temporary plates that you see that are a year or two or more years old, there was one I saw, it was like from 2015, and they're still driving around with these temp plates. Give me a break. We don't enforce them enough. Charlie Brennan, if you haven't listened to his program, man, I'm going to just guess he talks about it weekly, if not daily, because it's such a problem here. It's so ridiculous. All right, the story of George Sells. I want to get to that coming up next. What a great story that is on KMOX. From the KMOX newsroom, George Sells, thank you so much for coming in and sharing a story, because there was one in the news just recently. Down on Univision, there was a reporter that went down to interview their president that was there and shouldn't be there, Maduro. A lot of controversy going on in Venezuela right now. And what happened was the reporter was held and they wouldn't allow him to leave because he was asking some questions about, you know, some of their citizens eating trash and, you know, just the terrible conditions down in Venezuela. And it reminded me of a story you told me last time we met, which was how you were also held against your will as a reporter when you went up to Indiana to go report on something. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, it's One of those odd things. You ask somebody questions that they don't like. Usually they'll just politely or impolitely ask you to leave, but once in a while it gets a little bit uglier. I was working at WHAS-TV in Louisville, Kentucky at the time, and there was a group called the American Knights of the Ku Klux Klan that had shown up in our viewing area several times holding marches in the months prior to this happening. This was back in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to know, why do you keep coming here? What is the point of doing this? And so we arranged to interview the Imperial Wizard of the American Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, a guy named Jeff Berry, who now I can go back and look him up online and find a lot more about what he was like, and probably should have known better than than to going someplace where he was the host.
But well, that was quite a drive from Louisville down up to Auburn, Indiana. How many hours?
It's five or six. Yeah. It was something like that. So we made the arrangements to do this interview. It was going to be at his home in Auburn, Indiana. And part of the reason I wasn't terribly nervous about it was I had, in the past, done interviews. I had interviewed David Duke before. I worked in Louisiana.
Oh, okay.
I interviewed David Duke in his living room one time. And, you know, he is, you know, says some despicable things and is a despicable person, but he's not somebody you're really scared of when you're sitting across from him.
You didn't get a violent vibe.
No, not at all. Not at all. Well, we pull up to Jeff Berry's place, and his house may well have been a Hell's Angels bar.
Really?
And that was probably the first sign of things to be nervous about. But we go inside, we set up, and we start doing this interview and ask him the questions about why they were coming to Louisville in that area, spending so much time there. And then we go into some things. I had spoken to one of his former lieutenants who had found Jesus and, you know, said he wasn't a racist anymore, and he'd written a book, of course, about it.
Okay.
And so we had interviewed him, and he had some unkind things to say. And so I started asking Mr. Berry some questions about this. And this was when he took exception.
Oh. So you hit a sore spot when that book came up.
I struck a nerve. Yeah. There's no question about that. So we finished the interview. It got very cold, though it was cold the whole time. But we finished the interview. And
let me set the scene real quick. Are you alone in the living room, or is he like surrounded by bikers and things? When you say
he has a bunch of his friends in the room with him, various parts. It's kind of a big room,
so they're just hanging out listening to the interview.
There are probably 5-6 other people in the room.
Are they like sharpening knives and things?
No, but they look like they hadn't been fed in a while. It was a seedy looking group.
Okay.
So finish up the interview, and he looks over me and he says that those questions you asked me were bull, with something we won't say on family radio. And he goes, "You're not leaving with those tapes."
Ooh.
And I'm okay. We're leaving. And we start to get pack our stuff up. And he motions to a couple of his people, and they start grabbing pieces of our equipment.
Really?
One grabs a light, one grabs the wireless mic, one grabs just whatever's loose.
And what are
they
doing?
You're like, what's going on? You know when you're so shocked you don't react?
Yeah.
That's what this was.
So you weren't like trying to stop him at this point or anything?
Well, I eventually, yes, but it was at this point it was pretty much too late.
Yeah.
And so this gets drawn out. But basically they take the stuff, and a couple of the bigger guys hit the two exits and they're standing by the doors.
Oh boy.
And you're not leaving with those tapes. And being the good journalist, I'm not going to give away my tapes or my notes.
Yeah.
And yes, we are going to leave. And so we start talking, and I basically, what I say to him is, if you want to withdraw your permission for me to use this interview, I will not broadcast this interview.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think how we're going to get the heck out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
And so he wants to talk to my boss. So we get my news director on the phone.
Whoa. So at this point, it feels like a negotiation.
Yeah, it really does.
Whoa.
And talks to her for a little bit. And we go round and round with this. And a couple of times try to move toward the door. And, you know, somebody physically like gets in the way. Because at this point, I don't even care about the equipment. I just want to go.
Exactly.
And but blocking the exits. This went on for a solid 45 minutes.
How terrified were you?
Yeah, and it's getting yeah, pretty unnerving.
Did you feel like you were in physical harm, or did you feel like they were just hassling you?
Somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
I was a little nervous about it.
So you felt like if it were to escalate, you'd have been in trouble.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't feel good about it. Yeah. Just for no other reason that there were, you know, some big surly looking people in there that looked like they'd been in their share of bar fights.
And yeah.
I didn't really have any great desire to fight my way out. And this was a really obscure, isolated rural town. Yeah. And this place wasn't even in Auburn proper. This was like the greater Auburn Metroplex out of my, you know, a mile out of town down a road.
Did and they have any weapons?
At that moment, no. But then I'll tell you how it played out.
Yeah.
He says, he says to somebody, tell Mr. White he needs to come here. Mm-hmm. And somebody goes off and makes a phone call. And so we get to this point and we think he's going to let us leave. And we've got our stuff and we start for the door. And all of a sudden there's a knock on the door. He opens the door. In comes a guy carrying a shotgun.
Oh, man.
With a hoodie up over his head, pulled down.
Like a Klan's hoodie?
No, a hoodie, like a sweatshirt hoodie.
Okay.
Pulled up over his head, but pulled down because he's trying to obstruct some of his face. You can't really see his hair. Pale face. And he walks in. And he walks up to me and pumps the shotgun.
Ooh.
And Barry says, he wants your tapes. And he then proceeds to point the gun at me.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, remember I was talking earlier about journalism and you don't give up your notes. It's amazing how fast that all went out the window when a gun was introduced into the situation.
That's crazy.
Now it was like, we're getting the heck out of here. So
how do a bunch of guys hanging around, they have no weapons, but then they got to call in reinforcements to the enforcer to come in and do something?
I don't even know what the situation was. I don't know if any of them were armed or not.
No.
We'll never know. At that point, though, I was done.
Yeah.
And the photographer I was with, she wasn't interested in hanging around either.
Oh, was a woman photographer.
Yeah.
So how was her demeanor through all of this?
Oh, she was a pro. She was as upset as I was, nervous and everything else, but you keep a poker face, and that's what I did my best to do, and she did as well.
Oh,
And did a fine job of it. Long story short, we pop the tape, give him the tape, and we bolt.
Yeah. Funny business. You didn't
there was
think
no
about
it. Yeah, we were just, we were done.
You're like, I'm not switching the tape or anything. You're not going to try to do any funny
moves. We had tried to record what was going on at one point. And just left the camera rolling. And somebody had noticed that it was rolling. And they didn't get too bent out of it. They were just like, she's got that camera going, you know, that sort of thing. But we go out and we leave. And I know you're running short on time, so let me wrap through this. We leave. We head straight for the sheriff's department so we can file a report. They bring in the Illinois State Police. There's a detective from there who has been trying to get this guy, nail this guy for a while. He takes our report and we take off.
Yeah.
Go back to Louisville. And
just a long 6 hours
long
in the car
hour
and talk
drive.
About what just happened.
And then it's crickets. Nothing.
Yeah.
And we're wondering what's going on. Well, for whatever reason, maybe because it was an election year and maybe there were enough people around that agreed with the Klan in northeastern Indiana, but the prosecutor wasn't going to press any charges.
Wow.
It's their word against he said it was our word against theirs. And there was no tape. They never found a tape. They went to look for the tape, and it was gone.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Shocker.
Yeah, they really.
So they couldn't find any of our property, and there, you know, no evidence. So that's what he said, and that was going to be the end of it. So we get contacted by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with them,
well,
they follow
hate
groups, and Morris Dees was still involved at the time, and Richard Cohen, who has since replaced Morris Dees when he retired as running the whole organization, was actually the attorney who represented us. Mm-hmm. They contacted us and asked if they could file a lawsuit on our behalf because the prosecutor wasn't going to do anything. So they said, we'll try to break them in a different way, try to break them in civil court.
Wait, was it on your behalf or on the papers or the, excuse
no,
me,
it was
the
on
TV
our,
station?
It was on our behalf as individuals.
Oh, okay.
And so they filed the suit in federal court. Long story short, Barry didn't respond to anything, and so basically the judge found in our favor because I won't get into the legalese of it, but basically if you're sued and you just ignore it, then they can just find in the person filing the suit's favor.
Well, sure.
So that's what they did. And after this is after almost a year, and the folks from Fort Wayne, the journalists from Fort Wayne, started going up and knocking on this prosecutor's door and saying, well, they've been found, you know, Mr. Berry's been found guilty of kidnapping in federal court.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you doing anything?
Yeah.
And so he finally did press charges. We had to go, we were supposed to go back up and testify. We were on the road driving back up there to testify in that trial when they cut a plea bargain and Mr. Berry pled guilty and did 3 years in prison for
him. Oh, wow. So 3 years in prison, that's it.
That was the end of it.
Well, I guess three. I guess that's a...
He actually served three. It wasn't like three where you get out and a cup of coffee. Yeah. He actually served 3 years in prison. So,
wow, what a crazy story.
Yeah, and it was it all stemmed from asking some questions that he didn't like having asked. And
yeah.
as a journalist, you learn some lessons from something like that. I was much younger then. And
he expect? Like you're going to sit down and talk philosophy of the Klan with him or something?
Well, you know, every other story like that that I had ever done had been something along those lines.
Yeah.
You have to remember the time. David Duke was just finished with his near run at the Louisiana governor's office. And he got to where he got by wearing bad suits and talking down all of the stereotypical Klan stuff and trying to talk about, you know, civil rights for white people was his big talking point. And that was what... that they were trying to be this kinder, gentler sort of thing.
Yeah.
And had done a couple of stories since then, and that seemed to be the modus operandi for what were essentially still hate groups.
Yeah.
But they were trying to ditch the tough guy image and be a little more, you know, try to make themselves more palatable. And this guy was a complete departure from that. And,
yeah,
you know, quite frankly, I just wasn't really prepared for it as well as I should have
no
been.
No kidding. So whatever happened to Jeff Berry?
Jeff Berry eventually got into some kind of a dispute with his son, who was also involved in Klan activities.
Is this after he got out of jail?
Yes, this was after he was out of prison. His son beat him to a point that he almost died and ended up in a nursing home.
Oh, wow.
And he died sometime in the last 5 or 6 years, as I recall.
Interesting.
I actually got a call from... I got a call from a reporter up that way asking for my reaction one day that Jeff Berry was dead.
And they somehow found your name associated probably in some previous articles.
You
can,
if you Google my name, you'll find that story someplace.
Wow. So just out of the blue, you get a call. Hey, what's your reaction? You had no idea.
Yeah, I had no idea. And
you had probably no emotion?
Not really. I mean, you know, nature took its course.
It's weird to think you were kidnapped.
Yeah.
You were technically officially kidnapped.
Technically, that was kidnapping, yes. Yeah. I mean, nobody took me somewhere else. It was more like they just wouldn't let you leave. But, you know, my son claims he's kidnapped by his middle school on a daily basis, if you take that definition. But
much different than when the entire government of Venezuela holds you. But similarly enough, still kind of the same idea where a journalist goes in, asks some questions. They don't like what was being asked of them, and they're held against their will.
Yeah, difference being, I at least eventually was able to get some kind of satisfaction out of the whole deal, and I don't know if that's going to happen with the government of Venezuela.
No, probably not. George Sells from the contributing now in the KMOX newsroom. Thank you for sharing that story.
No problem. Glad to be here.
A crazy story, George. You know, he's learning. He's in the KMOX newsroom, and I think he's doing a fine job. You'll hear more of him coming up. Weather next, KMOX. About that, Fat Tuesday here already. I guess by tomorrow night we'll be doing Fat Tuesday nights. I don't exactly know what that means, but maybe I'll be able to find myself some discount punchkis around town. Wouldn't that be good? You know, that's not the case. They sell out of those very, very quickly. Man, you have to order those ahead of time. That's the thing. I've seen some people talk about the hot dog punchki where they cut them in half and then they put a... they treat them like they're a hot dog bun? Oh, man. I don't know. I've seen some pretty weird things in my life, but that one took the punchki. You know what I saw on KOMU over in Columbia? Boeing said it was testing a military aircraft at the same time a loud boom was reported across mid-Missouri. Every once in a while, I've caught some of those loud booms, and I haven't been able to figure out what they were. There was a couple of times, a place I lived at in Indiana, when I first moved to Indiana, I caught these big booms, and I thought for sure someone kicked the side of the house we were renting. Like, there was someone on the outside trying to break in, like they kicked, they're trying to kick a hole in the house. And it scared me. I couldn't believe it. it was the only time like I really thought this was going to be the time I'm going to have to shoot someone when I lived in Indiana. And then eventually, you know, we do a look through the house. I had my wife, you know, go secure. And this is before my son was born. And I took the dog around. There was nothing. And then I look out the window and I see a bunch of other people standing outside looking around like, what was that? So it was the unconfirmed. No one knew what the big boom was. It happened a couple other times. And then when I moved out of that neighborhood, eventually we ended up purchasing a home. Never heard it since. It was just in that area. Unexplained. So if you were in mid-Missouri and you heard those big booms, I wonder if it was similar to that. Did it seem like a boom like a plane was flying over, or did it seem like a boom like someone kicked the side of your house? I think there's a difference between the two. It said, we performed a functional check on a military craft March 4th between 10:20 and 11:30 a.m. in a statement Boeing put out. The flight was for a customer and required a contract. The statement did not specify the use of the sonic boom or whatever. It was reported in Fulton. Some reporters told KMOU that it shook their houses and rattled their windows. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I experienced. Some people look at it as a conspiracy. I like listening to different conspiracies, not because I believe them, but man, I don't know why I enjoyed listening to them so much. It's just one of those weird things like, ooh, you have a conspiracy, tell me about it. Last, oh boy, what was it? Week somewhere, maybe on Wednesday, last week, Thursday, whatever it was. Alex Jones made an appearance, and I haven't heard his name in a long time, other than he was going to be testifying regarding the Sandy Hook stuff. But Alex Jones was on Joe Rogan's podcast. I don't normally listen to his podcast, but I decided to listen to this one because it was about 4 hours long, and it was pure insanity. Here, let me play a clip for you. I want to see if you can follow along to Alex Jones's way of thinking. And he said he's ready to fight in court the Sandy Hook conspiracy theories and what some people are bringing up against him. And it's going to be interesting because obviously people are going to report on how he defends himself against parents that have lost children. And I don't think he has really any remorse for anything he's done. I think he sees himself as a victim. And based on this podcast, he sets himself up as a victim, as saying that things were taken out of context when really they weren't. They were using his direct words. But things were taken out of context because he was trying to play devil's advocate. And now he's labeled this, and it's basically ruined him because everyone wants to kick him off of their platforms. So I wanted to hear what he was saying about this. You know, I have an interest in learning about what some of these digital content creators are doing. I'm very curious about how they're toyed around by the people where they post their content to, you know, these social media networks that'll cut ties to you, or even, you know, podcast aggregators and things like that, and how that completely killed them. So, you know, he didn't talk about that much. He did, however, lay into some conspiracy theories I've never heard of. I'm going to play a couple of clips from the Joe Rogan podcast. I want to see if you can follow along. Okay, I'm not asking you to understand. I'm telling you, please don't try to understand. Don't look too far into it. Just see if you can follow along with what he's talking about here. Oh, here we go.
Your family, none of us are going to make it. There's a post-human era coming. The breakaway civilization, the deal's been made. It's not in the third dimension. They've made freaking deals with interdimensional aliens.
Okay.
Media never attacks you for that, because that's the truth.
Maybe this is true. I do not know this.
We'll get into it.
Okay, I do not know this. And even these human-pig hybrids, Jamie just pulled this up. I believe it's true.
I mean, I'm worried about human-pig hybrids. I'm sorry the Sandy Hook kids died. My identity is not that.
I get it.
They admit 5G in all the studies, LA Times, causes massive mutation and cancer.
Wait a minute.
Rattles your DNA apart. All of our kids are under attack.
You mean 5G?
And I'm mad at Trump for allowing 5G to come in.
This is the new internet
protocol? You know why they won't let China put in WAPO? You know, what's 5G WAPO? That's the big Chinese 5G.
You are on
5G.
Fire today.
No, can the big 5G. You?
You're on fire.
No, Joe, the 5G.
You're on fire.
Okay.
Could you follow any of that? All right. I tried to listen to this podcast because, again, I am just utterly fascinated by some of these conspiracy theories and what other people believe. But I'm having a hard time getting through it because it's just so off the rails, man. And here's the problem with Alex Jones. I think he's highly intelligent. And I think that he connects the dots where you wouldn't there's no connection. So he forces the connection of things that are unrelated in order to fit some really crazy theories. And he takes these things that have a little bit of truth to them. I mean, and he presents them in such a crazy way that people automatically dismiss it because they see the crazy storefront and they don't care to try to look into things by themselves. Because he brings up a lot of these government, like these government agencies that try these different testings. And yeah, there's a lot of these things that the government tested, not just the United States government, but across the world, that are pretty disgusting by today's standards in the name of science. But he'll present these things and he will say these things in such a weird, crazy way. And he'll just go absolutely off the deep end. And it just turns so many people off automatically. So here's another example. Let me play some more from that podcast.
But I'm going to make a film on this. Who've taken ayahuasca and DMT. I've not taken it. And for obvious reasons. And it's unbelievable because, I mean, they 100% in San Francisco is the main project site. Literally have an alien base, and they are literally communicating, and they've got like astronaut level people taking super hardcore levels of drugs and going into meetings with these things and making intergalactic deals. And that's what the government believes and says they're doing.
When you say the government, that's a broad stroke. You're using a broad brush. Like, what do you mean by the
breakaway
government?
Rogue intelligence agencies.
Okay, so what you're saying is essentially that they're using psychedelic drugs to communicate with interdimensional beings. All right.
Yeah, spirit guides.
Okay.
All right. So part of this, too, he brings up the some colleges are, what they do is they stop your heart, they pump you full of oxygen, and then they give you these drugs, which allows you to telepathically communicate with aliens in order for them to give you scientific breakthroughs and technology. And this is how we communicate with aliens. Got it. So that was part of the other podcast I got to. And he gets very worked up in a lot of these areas. And it's so, even for me that likes to listen to some of these things, because I'm just fascinated. I'm fascinated by the conspiracy culture. Still have a hard time listening to this because it's so off the deep end. Oh, boy. That was, in case you wanted to listen to it yourself, you can. I would just look for the clips online before listening to the whole podcast. That was from last week, and it was Joe Rogan's podcast, one of the most popular podcasters in the country. Now, obviously, it is not safe for work. There are swear words and things like that. I'm just telling you, it is off the deep end, man. All right, one more segment left. This is Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. Yeah, there's been a couple of celebrity deaths as of late. Luke Perry passing away today. I never really watched anything he was in. I wasn't 90210 material. I didn't care. He was in some other things too. I can't think of anything I've seen that he was in. So all I know is that the pop culture references of him being this, you know, this heartthrob of the 90s from 90210. Actors say he died Monday after suffering a massive stroke surrounded by his family and friends. The actor was hospitalized last Wednesday, where he remained there until his death. He survives by his two children and fiance, only 52 years old. Here's CBS News. Oh, no, this is just the 90210 theme song. So they gave us a little theme song to play underneath reading this little tidbit there. Bum, 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 bum. That's a super 90s theme song. Not bad. Apparently, I heard on the CBS update there at the top of the hour, they were thinking about rebooting it. They're in talks to do it. You know who else died? A famous wrestler, King Kong Bundy. I see him trending on Twitter right now. Says this person with wrestling confirming 61 years old, King Kong Bundy, passing away. I recognized him. I mean, he was around, I think, when I first started watching, but he was at the very tail end. He wasn't, when I was younger, I don't remember him actually wrestling. I just remember him in some other pop culture references. Like, he was in some movies and television shows. He was, I think, in Married with Children episode. How about that? Wow. You know, and for all, when we look at certain people, and like last week, the Who's the Boss, one of the characters passed away on that. She played the mom, and they talked about her stealing the scene, and you know, these things happen. Kevin Kleen did a whole nother story in obituaries. This is completely unrelated from celebrity deaths, or it could be about celebrity deaths. I don't know. I actually haven't had a chance to listen to this one yet. All I know is I enjoy every time Kevin Kleen does a commentary.
Her name is Mrs. Henker. She sent us a red, cheerful-looking greeting card-sized envelope, stuffed full of something and scotch tape for extra strength. Inside were dozens of death notices clipped from the newspaper, some of them yellow with age. The note said, "Kevin, you've made me do this. I've collected these for a long time." Recently, I had highlighted the obituary of P.J. James of Perryville. That's what she heard, and it said that he was a man of wisdom who once said, "He who dies penniless knows how to budget." So here are some of Mrs. Henker's prized obituaries she sent us. Joel Sidney Calamus died March of 2017. His obituary includes the line, "Joel leaves behind many people who love and will miss him dearly, friends for a lifetime, and more lady friends and romantic interests than we can afford to print." Judy Svetanics from August of 2013. She was the wife of the late Fire Chief Neil Svetanics. Her tribute ends with a line, "In lieu of flowers, Judy had requested that you take your family to dinner on the hill, go to Macy's and buy yourself something nice with a coupon, of course." Rick Buzz Beardsley's January 2014 obituary has a line at the end that says, "Please refrain from wearing scented products to the funeral home." I guess somebody of the survivors had a perfume allergy. John Robert Wood's obituary from July of 2018 was written by him in advance. "It disappoints me," he says, "to announce this, but if you're reading this, apparently I've passed on." Further down, he says, "To the doctors at the ICU who attended me, I would like to say thanks for nothing." James Thornhill Walsh died in March of 2009. And his obituary says, "He was present at Anheuser-Busch the night Prohibition ended to follow the first trucks to a local watering hole. An avid canoeist, he also loved to jump off bridges. He cherished sardine sandwiches with butter." Thanks to Mrs. Henker for sending those in. I used to clip obituaries myself at one time, and I couldn't find them in time to get my hands on the exact one, but my prize obituary was, "She was always first in line at garage sales." With a whole other story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
Aw, that's pretty good. There's something magical about being first in line at a garage sale, isn't it? You feel like you get to be the first one to sort through the things that other people don't want. Every once in a while, you find a really good... The best garage sale find I ever had was a Nintendo 64. It was in a box. It was an old baby diaper box. And I look in, there's four controllers. There's about seven or eight games. And the Nintendo 64 is in there. I have no idea if it works. And I said, "You know, this looks good. If it doesn't work, you know, how much do you want for it?" And they're like, "I don't know." I said, "How about $20? She's like, "Okay, that's fine. $20. This is a steal of a lifetime, getting that Nintendo 64. Just in case Maynard's listening, you'll like that story. I saw you just tweeted back. Yeah, people love Punchkis, but not a lot of people apparently know what they are around this area. Producer Ben was mentioning that if it wasn't for our conversation last year on it, he wouldn't have known. Well, we got a couple of minutes here. How about this one? You know, Dr. Seuss is releasing a new book 28 years after his death. Look at all this death talk. Talk about the obituaries. Maybe we'll do a segment sometime in the future about what you would want in your obituary. That could be fun. You know, we talk about the death of Luke Perry, and now trending on Twitter, King Kong Bundy, the old wrestler, passing away too. So Dr. Seuss is going to be releasing a book. It's called Dr. Seuss's Horse Museum. On September 3rd of this year, first printing will have about 250,000 copies, which makes sense. So apparently, the unfinished manuscript has been finished by acclaimed illustrator Andrew Joyner, who took illustration and inspiration from Seuss's original sketches to complete the book. They accompany reproductions of famous horse artworks by Picasso's in there. Dr. Seuss characters from other stories, including Cat in the Hat and the Grinch and Horton the Elephant, make cameos throughout. We got a couple of Dr. Seuss books at my house. My kid, indifferent to Dr. Seuss. He doesn't really particularly like them. It's not his go-to. It seems weird. Even though Dr. Seuss was this giant children's author, he's just like, eh, he's not into it. I guess there's a time and place where the Dr. Seuss books inspired a lot of other children's literature, and the stuff that my kid likes, I'm sure, has to be influenced by Dr. Seuss, but he doesn't like the original stuff. It says, the publisher's note at the end of the book reveals insights into the discovery of the manuscript and the sketches, Seuss's love of modern art, Joyner's creative process, and information about the artist, which is kind of cool if you want to learn a little bit about Picasso. Because, you know, all the kids are really interested in Picasso. They want to know more about Paw Patrol. If there's a character named Picasso, maybe they'd want to know that, but really, no. The announcement of the new book comes at the heels of Netflix releasing a new 13-episode animated series of the Seuss's book, Green Eggs and Ham, which is kind of cool. Voiced by Michael Douglas is in there. Another also featuring Ellen DeGeneres and Adam Devine. So that's kind of cool, I guess. You know, Netflix, man, they got all that money. They can do whatever they want, whenever they want. I guess that's probably not the worst thing they could be spending their money on. You know, make sure to follow me on Twitter, at Ryan Recker, as we say goodnight for the night. If you miss any part of the show, you can download it for free as a podcast at KMOX.com/overnight. Yeah, we get our own URL direct link there, KMOX.com/overnight. Or you can also find it on your favorite podcast app. Isn't that fun? Oh, someone just texted in, read that obituary last week, wanted everyone to know she finally had a smoking hot body. You did not see that. Was that a local obituary, a 90-year-old? How about that? Kevin, Colleen, look what you got yourself into. It's overnight. We'll see you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.